Welcome to the Evidence Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this February the 10th on the West Coast, now February the 11th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to also welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. We appreciate you helping us spread the truth. I've got kind of an interesting show planned for you tonight. I'm not going to be doing a whole lot of speaking tonight, and some of you may be relieved by that. We are going to be listening to a clip that is an interview of Jiddu Krishnamurti, conducted by Dr. Alan W. Anderson back in 1974. And I think you're going to find the topic rather interesting. He's going to talk about the nature and the eradication of fear. But first, we're going to listen to Steely Dan tell us about the monkey in your soul. What does that mean, monkey in your soul? Well, I suppose if you think of some of the sayings that we have, monkey see, monkey do, it's reacting like everybody else does. It's not reacting as the, or acting as the 100th monkey. That monkey that changes the whole society of his peers by stepping outside of patterns, stepping outside of control, and using creativity and acknowledging that the society, even if it's not analyzed by the monkey, but acting out in let's say synchronicity with nature, in sync with nature, in other words. That monkey can learn a truth and exhibit higher knowledge. And I can submit to you that he wouldn't do that through fear, but through courage, operating from his heart, in tune with the unseen forces of the universe, and eventually affecting the whole group. Now, that could be something as simple as peeling a banana, or something as simple as thinking about what someone else is telling you to do because they say you have to do it, rather than you do it because you have made a sovereign choice to do it. It's called freedom. One of the things that keeps us in bondage is fear. And we're going to listen to a recording of Jiddu Krishnamurti being interviewed by Dr. Alan W. Anderson. And I'll let these words speak for themselves.
Krishnamurti, in dialogue with Dr. Alan W. Anderson. J. Krishnamurti was born in South India and educated in England. For the past 40 years, he has been speaking in the United States, Europe, India, Australia, and other parts of the world. From the outset of his life's work, he repudiated all connections with organized religions and ideologies, and said that his only concern was to set men absolutely, unconditionally free. He is the author of many books, among them The Awakening of Intelligence, The Urgency of Change, Freedom from the Known, and The Flight of the Eagle. This is one of a series of dialogues between Krishnamurti and Dr. Alan W. Anderson, who is professor of religious studies at San Diego State University, where he teaches Indian and Chinese scriptures and the oracular tradition. Dr. Anderson, a published poet, received his degree from Columbia University and the Union Theological Seminary. He has been honored with a Distinguished Teaching Award from the California State Universities.
Mr. Krishnamurti, if I recall correctly, I think we had begun to talk together before, last time, just at the point where the question of fear arose. And I think we both perhaps could explore that together a little.
Yes,
would,
I
would
think
be good
so
enough?
Too. I wonder how we can approach this problem. Because this is a common problem in the world. Everyone, or I can say almost everyone, is frightened of something. Or it may be the fear of death, fear of loneliness, fear of not being loved, fear of not becoming famous, successful, or also fear of not having physical security, and the fear of not having psychological security. There are so many multiple form of fears. Now, to go into this problem really very deeply, can the mind, and in which includes the brain, be really, fundamentally, be free of fear? Because fear, as I've observed, is a dreadful thing.
Oh, yes.
It darkens the world, it destroys everything. And I don't think we can discuss fear, which is one of the principles in life, without also discussing or going into the pursuit of pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
The two are the sides, two sides of the same coin.
Fear and pleasure. Two sides of the same coin. Yes, yes.
So as we are going to first take fear, there is conscious as well as unconscious fears.
Mm-hmm.
Fears that are observable, that can be remedied, and fears that are deep-rooted, deep in the recesses of one's mind.
At the unconscious level.
At the deeper levels.
Yes.
Now, we must be concerned with both. Not only the obvious external fears, but also the deep-seated, undiscovered fears.
Mm-hmm.
The fears that have been handed down, traditional fears.
Being told what to fear.
Mm-hmm. And also fears that the mind itself has produced, has cultivated.
In one's personal history.
Personal. And also in relation to others.
Yes.
Fears of physical insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Losing a job, losing a position, losing something.
Mm-hmm.
And not all the positive is not having something. And so on and on. So, if we are going to talk about this question, how shall we, you and I, approach this? First take the outer, the obvious physical fears, and then from there move to the inner.
Very well.
And so, cover the whole field, not just one little fear of an old lady or an old man or a young man. You take the whole problem of fear.
Good.
Not mm-hmm. just take one leaf of fear or one branch of it, but the whole movement of fear.
Yes. We're back to that word movement again.
Movement
good,
of fear.
Good. The whole movement of fear.
Mm-hmm. Now, outwardly, physically, it is becoming obvious that we must have security.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Physical security, that is, food, clothes, and shelter, are absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Not only for the Americans, for the whole humanity.
Yes, of course.
And it's no good saying we are secure and to hell with the rest of the world. The world is you.
Yes.
And you are the world.
Mm-hmm.
You can't isolate yourself and say, I'm going to be secure and not bother about the others.
Secure myself against them.
Against them. It becomes a division, conflict, war,
yes.
All that produced. So, that physical security is necessary for the brain.
Mm-hmm.
The brain can only function, as I have observed it, in myself, in others, not that I'm an expert on brain or neurology and all that, but I've observed it. The brain can function only in complete security. Then it functions efficiently, healthily, not neurotically.
Mm-hmm.
And its actions won't be lopsided, brain needs security. As a child needs security.
Mm-hmm.
That security is denied when we separate ourselves. The Americans, the Russians, the Indians, the Chinese, the national division has destroyed that security.
Mm-hmm.
Because of wars.
Yes, that is a physical barrier.
Physical fact.
Yes, yes.
Right. And yet we don't see that. Sovereign governments with their armies, with their navies and all the rest of it, is destroying security.
In the name of...
In the name of...
providing it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. You see, what we're trying to get at is how stupid the mind is. It wants security, and it must have security. And yet it's doing everything to destroy that security.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, I see that.
So that's one factor. And the factor of security is in jobs. Mm-hmm. Either in a factory, in a business, or as a priest in his job.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So occupation becomes very important.
Indeed, it does. Yes.
So, suppose if I lose my job, I'm frightened. And that job depends on the environment, on the production, business, factory, all that commercialism,
mm-hmm.
consumerism, and therefore competition with other countries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
France isolating itself because it wants to, which is happening.
Yes.
So, we need physical security, and we are doing everything to destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
If we all of us said, look, let's all get together, not with plans, not my plan, your plan, or the communist plan, or Mao plan, let's, as human beings, sit together and solve this problem. They could do it. Science has the means of feeding people. But they won't, because they are conditioned to function so as to destroy security which they are seeking.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the major factors in physical security. Then there is the fear of physical pain.
Mm-hmm.
Is physical pain, in the sense, one has had pain, let's say, last week. Mind is afraid that it should happen again. So there is that kind of fear.
It's very interesting with respect to the phenomenon of physical pain.
Physical pain.
Because what is remembered is not the neurological reaction, but the emotion that attends
yes.
what occurred.
That's it. So that's that fear.
Right.
Then there is the fear of outward opinion, what people say. Public opinion.
Reputation.
Mm-hmm. You see, sir, all this is born out of disorder.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that...
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
It, which
yes.
we discussed...
Which we looked into previously.
So, can the mind bring about security... Physical security, which means food, clothes, and shelter for everybody. Not as a communist, as a capitalist, as a socialist, or as a Mao. But meet together as human beings to resolve this problem. It can be done. But nobody wants to do it. Because they don't feel responsible for this. I don't know if you've been to India. If you've gone from town to village, as I have done, you see the appalling poverty, the degradation of poverty, the sense of hopelessness of it.
Yes, I have been to India, and it was the first time in my life that I sensed poverty not simply as a privation, but it seemed to have a positive character about it. It was so stark.
I know, sir. I know. We have been through all that.
Oh, yes.
So, physical survival is only possible when human beings get together. Not as communist, socialist, but all the rest. As human beings who say, look, this is our problem. For God's sake, let's solve. But they won't, because they're burdened with problem, with planning. How to solve that? I don't know if I'm...
Yes.
You have your plan. I have my plan. Here's it. So planning becomes most important. Plans become most important rather than the starvation. And we fight each other. And common sense, affection, care, love can change all this. So I won't go into that. Then the fear of public opinion. You understand? What my neighbor will say.
My image, the national image, yes.
And I depend on my neighbor.
Oh, yes. Necessarily.
If I am a Catholic living in Italy, I have to depend on my neighbor. Because I lose my job if I'm a Protestant there. So I accept it. I go and salute the Pope or whatever. It has no meaning. So I'm afraid of public opinion. See, what a human mind has reduced itself to. I don't say to please us with public opinion, because that's stupid. They are conditioned. They are frightened as much as I am. So, there is that fear. And there is the fear, physical fear of death, which is an immense fear. That fear one has to tackle differently when you come to it, when you talk about death and all
yes.
that. So there is the outward form of fear, fear of darkness, fear of public opinion, fear of losing a job, fear of survival, not being able to survive. Sir, I have lived with people with one meal a day. And that's not enough even. I walked behind a woman with a girl, and the girl said in India, Mother, I'm hungry. And the mother says, you have already eaten for the day. You understand?
Yes.
So there are all that physical fears, pain, and the fear of recurring pain, and that. And there is the other fears are much more complicated. Fears of dependency, inwardly. I depend on my wife. I depend on my guru. I depend on the priest. I depend on the... so many dependents. And I'm afraid to lose, to be left alone.
To be rejected.
To be rejected. If that woman turns away from me, I'm lost. I get angry, brutal, violent, jealous, because I've depended on her. So dependency is one of the factors of fear. And inwardly, I'm afraid. I'm afraid of loneliness. The other day I saw on the television a woman saying, the only fear I have in life is my loneliness. And therefore, being afraid of loneliness, I do all kinds of neurotic activities. Being lonely, I attach myself to you or to a belief, or to a savior, to a guru. And I protect the guru, the savior, the belief. And that soon becomes neurotic.
I fill up the hole with this new image.
This rubbish.
Yes.
There's that fear. Then there's the fear of not being able to arrive, succeed in this world of disorder, and succeed in the world of spiritual, so-called spiritual world. That's what they're all doing now.
Spiritual achievement.
Which they call enlightenment.
Expanding consciousness.
Yes,
I know what you mean. It's very interesting that you just got through describing fear of being left behind.
Yes, sir.
Now we're fearing that we'll never arrive.
Arrive.
Yes, please go on.
Same thing.
Yes.
Then there is the fear of not being, which translates itself in identification with. I must identify myself.
In order to be.
To be. Let me identify myself with my country. And I say to myself, that's too stupid. I must be identify myself with God, which I've invented. God has not made man in his image. Man has made God in his image.
I follow you.
So, not being, not achieving, not arriving, brings about tremendous sense of uncertainty, tremendous sense of not being able to fulfill, not being able to be with. And the cry, I must be myself.
Do my own thing.
My own thing, which is rubbish. So there are all these fears, both logical fears, irrational fears, neurotic fears, and fears of survival, physical survival. So, now, how do you deal with all these fears and many more fears which you can't go into, which we will presently? How do you deal with them all? One by one?
Well, you would just be in the mournful round of fragmentation if you did that.
Yeah. And also there's the fear, hidden fears.
Yes.
Which are much more active.
But continual... bubbling up from
bubbling
below.
Up when I'm not conscious, they take over.
That's right.
So how am I to deal first with the obvious fears which we have described? Shall I deal it one by one to secure myself? You follow?
Yes.
Or take loneliness and tackle that, come to grips with it, go beyond it and so on? Or is there a way of dealing with fear, not with the branches of it, but with the root of it? Because if I take each leaf, each branch, it'll take all my lifetime. And if I begin to analyze my fears, then that very analysis becomes a paralysis.
And then I even fear that I might not have analyzed correctly.
Correctly. And I'm caught over and over again. So how shall I deal with this problem as a whole, not just parts of it, fragments of it?
Isn't there a hint about how it might be dealt with? Of course, when I say hint here, I mean terribly, yes, terribly slight. I don't think I would call it a pointer. But fear, no matter how many varieties one imagines he knows, fear does have a common taste, you might say.
Yes.
There is something there. That,
yes, sir, but yes. What shall I do with it?
Oh, yes, of course, I quite understand. But it interested me while you were speaking to observe that already when we think of many fears, we haven't even paid attention to how we fear when we fear.
Yes.
I was interested to have that flash,
yes,
because
yes,
it seems to be altogether consonant with what you're talking about. And I said to myself, now, in our conversations, we've been pointing to movement. The movement of fear is one.
Yes, a tremendous one.
It is a unified field,
yeah,
of destruction.
It is the common factor of every human being.
The whole thing, yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah, whether a man lives in Moscow or in India or in any place, it is the common thing of this fear. And how shall he deal with it? Because unless the mind is free of fear, really, not verbally or ideologically, absolutely free of fear. And it is possible to be free, completely of fear. I'm saying this not as a theory, but I know it. I've gone into it.
Yes.
Very deeply.
Actual. Yes.
Now, how shall I deal with this? So I ask myself, what is fear? Not the objects of fear or the expressions of fear.
No, or the instant reaction to danger.
Danger.
No.
What is fear?
It's an idea in my mind in part.
What is fear, sir?
If we have said it's an abiding...
Behind the words, behind the description, the explanations, the way out and the way in and all the rest of it, what is fear? How does it come?
If I followed you through our conversations up until now, I'd be inclined to say that it is another expression of the observer's disordered relation to the observer.
What does that mean? What is the observer? What you say, look, problem is this. I'm only making the problem clearer. So this We have, man has tried to lop off or prune one fear after the other. Mm-hmm. Through analysis, through escape, through identifying himself with something which is called courage, mm-hmm, or saying, well, I don't care, I rationalize my fears and remain in a state of rationalized intellectual verbal explanation, but the thing is boiling. Mm-hmm. So what shall I do?
Now, we're going to pause for a moment here so that you can contemplate a little bit on what was said, because this is a lot of information, especially if you're hearing something like this for the first time. We're listening to Dr. Alan W. Anderson interviewing Jiddu Krishnamurti on the topic of fear. And we're going to let Jeff Lorber take you to the Island of Temples. Thank you.
What is fear? Unless I find this out, not because you tell me, unless I find it out for myself, as I find for myself that I am hungry. Nobody has to tell me I'm hungry. I have to find this out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, now there's a difference here in terms of what you have just said. And in so saying, pointing to something. And my earlier reply, when you asked me what is fear, I did the usual academic thing. If I have followed you up until now, then it seems clear that, whereas, let's forget about the following.
That's
let's
right,
zero in on it right now. And then I must say, not I might say, but I must say that I can't tell anybody else what fear is with respect to what it is I am going to discover in me as such. And all my continual descriptions about it are simply a deflection from my immediate issue, which is here.
Yes.
Yes.
So, I am not escaping.
No.
Mm-hmm. I am not rationalizing. Mm-hmm. I am not analyzing. Because analysis is real paralysis.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. When you're confronted with a problem like this, merely spinning going on, analyzing, and the fear of not being able to analyze perfectly, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And therefore go to a professional who needs also an analysis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm caught. So I will not analyze, because I see the absurdity. You follow, sir?
Yes, I do.
I won't run.
No backing off.
Backing off.
Flight.
No explanations, no rationalization, no analysis. I'm faced with this thing. Mm-hmm. And what is fear? Wait. Then there are the unconscious fears.
Yes.
Of which I don't know. They express themselves occasionally when I'm alert. When I see the thing coming out of me.
When I'm alert.
Alert. When I'm watching. Hmm. Or when I'm not, when I'm looking at something, this comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Uninvited. It is important for the mind to be completely be free of fear. It's essential, as food is essential. It's essential for the mind to be free of fear. So, I see outwardly what we've discussed. Now I say, what is this? What are the hidden fears? Can I consciously invite them come to the surface? You follow?
Yes, I do.
Or the unconscious cannot touch that. You follow me?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Conscious can only deal with the things it knows.
Uh-huh.
But it cannot observe the thing it doesn't know.
Or have access to.
So, what am I to do? Dreams? Dreams are merely the continuation of what I've lived during the day. They continue in a different form and so on. We won't go into that for the moment. So how is all that to be awakened and exposed? The racial fears? The fears that this society has taught me?
Mm-hmm.
The fears that the family has imposed, the neighbor, you know, all those crawling ugly, brutal things that are hidden, how shall they all come up naturally and expose so that the mind sees them completely? You understand?
Yes, I do. I was just thinking about what we're doing in relation to what you're saying. Here we are in a university situation where hardly any listening goes on at all, if any. Why? Well, if we were to relate to each other in terms of my sitting back here, saying to myself every time you made a statement, well, what do I have to say back? Even if my reaction were benign, and I'd say to myself as a professor, I'd say, well, now, that's a very interesting concept. Perhaps we could clear that up a little bit, you know? that nonsense. Nonsense in terms of what is immediate here. That's what I mean. I don't mean demonstrating something on the board. We should never have begun to be together.
Yeah.
Never started.
Right, quite.
And yet we might have given ourselves the idea that we were trying very hard to be sincere. Yes, I understand. But fear is at the base of that, too, because the professor is thinking to himself...
His position,
he's got his reputation at stake here. He better not keep quiet too long, because someone might get the idea that either he doesn't understand a thing that's going on, or he doesn't have anything to contribute to what's going on. All of which has nothing to do with anything.
Look how what is that found. I cannot... The conscious mind, conscious thought, cannot invite and expose the hidden fears. It cannot analyze it. Because that's analysis, we said, is inaction. And if there's no escape, I would... Shan't run off to a church or Jesus or Buddha or somebody, or identify myself with some other thing. I pushed all those aside because I've understood their use.
Yes.
Their futility. So I'm left with this. I'm this, my baby.
Yes.
Right. So, what shall I do? Some action has to take place.
Yes, indeed.
I can't just say, well, I've pushed all that aside. I've just said. Now, just see what happens, sir. Because I've pushed all those aside, through observation, not through resistance, not through violence, because I've negated all those, escape, no analysis, running off to something, and all the rest of that, I have energy, haven't I? Mind has energy now.
Now it has, yes. Yes, it floods up.
Because I've pushed away all the things that are dissipate energy.
Energy leaks.
Therefore, I have now this thing. I'm confronted with that. Confronted with fear. Now what can I do? Listen to this, sir. What can I do? I can't do anything. Because it is I who have created the fear. Public opinion.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right? So I cannot do a thing about fear.
Precisely.
But there is the energy which has been gathered, which has come into being when all dissipation of energy has ended. There's energy.
Exactly. Virtue. Right.
Energy.
Manifested.
Energy.
Exactly.
Now, what happens? This is not some hocus pocus. This is some kind of mystical experience. There is actual fear, and I have tremendous energy, which has come because there is no dissipation of energy. So what takes place? So wait.
Oh, I'm waiting. Wait. Something going through my mind.
Yeah. What takes place? So I say, so what has created fear? What has brought it about? Because if I have the energy, you follow, sir, to put that question and find the answer for that question. Not, I've got energy now. I don't know.
Yes.
So, what has brought it about? You, my neighbor, my country, my culture?
Myself.
Mm-hmm. What has brought it about?
I've done it.
Who is I?
I don't mean I as the fragmented observer up from me. It is this. I'm thinking what you said earlier about the mind as disordered, which requires to empty itself of the disorder. Doesn't require another mind to do it.
No,
yes.
I'm asking, what has brought this fear into me, into my consciousness? I won't use that word because we'll have to go into that in a different way. What has brought this fear? And I won't leave it till I find it. You understand, sir? Because I've got the energy to do it. I don't depend on anybody. On any book, on any philosopher, nobody.
Would it be the case that once that energy begins to flood, that the question itself disappears?
And I begin to find the answer.
Yes.
I don't put the question.
No,
but
no.
But I find the answer.
Right.
Now.
Yeah.
Right. What is the answer?
The answer couldn't be
academic,
a description or something. A change has occurred.
What is the,
in the being?
What is the answer to this fact of fear, which has been sustained, which has been nourished, which has carried on from generation to generation? So. I must. Can the mind observe this fear, the movement of it?
The movement of it.
Not just a piece of fear.
Or a succession of fears.
Yeah, but the movement of this
fear. The movement
whole
of fear itself.
Fear. Mm-hmm. Observe it. Without the thought that has created the observer. I don't.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So, can there be observation of this fact, which I have called it fear? Because I have recognized it, the mind has recognized it, because it has had fear before. So through recognition and association, it says this is fear.
Yes, that never stops.
Wait, so
yes.
Can the mind observe without the observer, who is the thinker, observe this fact only? That means, can the observer, which is thought, the observer as thought has produced this. I don't know. So thought has produced this. right? Mm-hmm. I'm afraid of my neighbor, what he says, because I want to be respectable. Hmm? That is the product of thought. Mm-hmm. Thought has divided the world into America, Russia, India, and China, and all the rest of it. And that destroys security. That's the result of thought. Mm-hmm. I am lonely. And therefore I act neurotically, which is also the fact of thought. So I see very clearly that thought is responsible for that. Right? Right, sir? Mm-hmm. So what will happen with thought? Thought is responsible for this. It has nourished it, it has sustained it, it has encouraged it, it has done everything to sustain it. I'm afraid of the pain that I had yesterday happening again tomorrow, which is the movement of thought. So, can thought, which can only function within the field of knowledge. That's its ground.
Yes.
And fear is something new each time. Fear isn't old.
No.
It is made old.
Yes.
When I recognize it. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yes.
When the process of recognition, which is the association of words and so on, can the mind observe that without the interference of thought? If it does, fear is not.
Right. The thing that was hitting me while I was sitting here intently, was that the moment that occurs, the thought and the fear immediately disappear.
So, fear then can be put away completely. If I was living as a human being in Russia, and they threatened me to put into prison, probably would be afraid. Which is a natural self-preservation.
Of course.
That's a natural fear, like a bus coming rushing towards you. You step aside. You run away from a dangerous animal. That's a natural self-protective reaction. But that's not fear. It's a response of intelligence operating. Say, for God's sake, move away from the rushing bus. But the other factors are factors of thought.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, can thought understand itself and know its place and not project itself? Not control, which is an abomination. If you control thought, who is the controller? Another fragment of thought.
Another thought.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a circle, vicious game you're playing with yourself. So, can the mind observe without a movement of thought? It will only do that when you have understood the whole movement of fear. Understood, that's not analyzed, looking at it. It's a living thing, therefore you have to look at it. It's only a dead thing that can dissect and analyze, kick it around. But a living thing, you have to watch.
This is very shocking, because in our last conversation, just towards the end, we came to the place where we raised the question of someone saying to himself, I think I understand what I've heard. Now I'm going to try that. And then fear holds up a mirror to itself.
Oh, of course.
And and one is suddenly ringed about by a world of mirrors.
You don't say, sir. When you see dangerous animal, I think about it. You move. You act. Because that's tremendous destruction waiting there. There's a self-protective reaction, which is intelligence, say, get out. Mm-hmm. Here we are not using intelligence. And intelligence operates when we have looked at all these fears, the movements of it, the inwardness of it, the subtlety of it, the ugly, the whole movement. Then out of that comes intelligence and says, I've understood it.
Yes, Mama. Yes, it's very beautiful. Very beautiful. We were going to say something about pleasure.
That must be dealt.
And we'll write. Exactly.
So, sir, look, we said there's the physical fears and psychological fears.
Yes.
Both are interrelated. You can't say, well, that's one, this is the other. They're all interrelated. And the interrelationship and the understanding of that relationship brings this intelligence which will operate physically, saying, let us then work together, cooperate together to feed man. You follow, sir? Mm-hmm. Let's not be national, religious, sectarian. What is important to feed man, to clothe him, to make him live happily. Mm-hmm. But you see, unfortunately, we are so disorderly in our ways of life that we have no time for anything else. Our disorder is consuming us.
It's interesting in relation to tradition. I don't mean to start an entirely new conversation now, but just to see what is immediately suggested, among many other things that would be, but just this one. What we could say about the misuses of tradition would be that we are actually taught what to fear.
Yes,
in our language, tradition. We have an expression, don't we, that expresses part of this, old wives' tales, we
yes,
say.
Yes, yes.
An accumulation of warnings about things that are simply imaginary, not in the creative sense of imagination, and I'm using the word creative there very loosely, very loosely, but fantasia, phantasmagoria. From the little one's earliest years, gets this stuff with the bottle.
Mortal dinosaur.
And then when we get into adolescence, we reflect on these things we've learned, and if things go wrong, we feel that perhaps it's because we haven't
sufficiently
grasped what we've been told. And then some young people will say at that point, I'm going to junk the whole thing. But then immediately, the loneliness question arises. Yes.
They can't, sir, this is life. You can't reject one part and accept the other part.
Exactly.
Life means all this. Freedom, order, disorder, communication, relationship, response. It's the whole thing is living. If we don't understand, say, well, I don't want to have anything to do with it, you're not living. You're dying.
Yes, of course. I wonder I wonder how much... I wonder... I keep saying I wonder, and the reason I wonder is because what we have been saying about this movement as a unified field is, when stated, taken by thought, and you might say, put in the refrigerator, and that's the reality to the person.
Quite so.
And when we want to look at it, well, it's one of the ice cubes. We break out and have a look.
What place has knowledge in the regeneration of man?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, look, our knowledge is you must be separate. Mm-hmm. You are an American, I'm a Hindu. Mm-hmm. That's our knowledge. Our knowledge is you must rely on your neighbor because he knows he's respectable. Mm-hmm. Society is respectability. Mm-hmm. Society is moral, so you accept that. So knowledge has brought about all these factors. Mm-hmm. And you are telling me suddenly, asking me, what place has that? What place has tradition? What place has the accumulated knowledge of millennia? Mm-hmm. The accumulated knowledge of science, mathematics, and that is essential. Mm-hmm. But what place has knowledge which I have gathered through experience, through generations after generation of human endeavor, what place has it in the transformation of fear? None whatsoever.
No,
you see?
Clear. Because what we reached before, that upon the instant that this is grasped, the thought that was operating as a fragment and the fear vanish. And it isn't that something takes its place in succession.
No, nothing takes its place.
No, nothing takes its place. Nothing takes its place.
It doesn't mean there is emptiness.
Oh, no. But you see, it's right there. When you start thinking about that as a thought, you get scared.
That's why it's very important to find out or to understand what the function of knowledge and where knowledge becomes ignorance. We mix the two together. Knowledge is essential. Knowledge is essential. But when that knowledge becomes ignorance, when we are trying to understand actually what is, the what is this fear, this disorder, this irresponsibility. To understand it, you don't have to have knowledge. All that you have to do is to look. Look outside you, look inside you, and then you see clearly that knowledge is absolutely unnecessary. It has no value in the transformation or the regeneration of man. Because freedom is not born of knowledge. Freedom is when all the burdens are not. You don't have to search for freedom. It comes when the other is not.
It isn't something in place of the horror that was there before. Yes.
I think that's enough.
Yes, I quite follow you. Maybe next time we could...
Tomorrow we can carry on.
We could carry on into this...
Pleasure.
With pleasure, yeah. As such, the opposite side of that coin.
We want to thank Jiddu Krishnamurti for his insight into the various aspects of fear. It's a very difficult topic to discuss. And, of course, we want to thank the gentleman who produced this, Dr. Alan W. Anderson. And this is part of the Krishnamurti Foundation's collection of interviews, lectures, and the writings of J. Krishnamurti. It's fantastic information. I could add one small thing to it. In one word, he was describing all the different aspects of fear and that they really have no basis in reality. When you recognize that they've all been created to serve a particular purpose that is destructive and disempowering. And he said very distinctly that at the point where you recognize these things, the moment the thoughts that move with the fear cease, there is an energy present. There's the awareness of a tremendous energy, and that is who we are. That is where you allow the heart to take over and open up to the whole of the universe. There's, I could say much about this, but basically fear is an illusion. It's not real. It's something offered to us. We accept it without even considering whether it's something worth having in our possession or tucking away for a rainy day. And the various aspects he described of pain and loss and suffering, pain, all these things cause us to have some sort of pain or discomfort or even disease. And then we enter into this state of self-pity and the ego, the false ego, causing us to worry more about what our friends and our neighbors and our families think about us. So we play by the rules of the fear game. Those that attempt and legislate the masses through the minefield of fear are fearful themselves, which is why they do what they do. And he very simply, Krishnamurti, very simply pointed out how we can step outside that. And at that moment that you make the choice to do that, you become empowered. And those things now are non-existent. And they have no impact on anything that you would be outside of fearful. Here's another way to look at that in the words of Stevie Wonder.
Crime. many times before to find your strategy to peace is war, killing helpless men, women, and children that don't even know what they're dying for. We can't trust you when you take a stand with a burning Bible in your hand and the cold expression on your face saying, give us what we want or we'll destroy.
Stevie Wonder's message is quite clear. If you feel your heart's been opened up tonight, then by all means, take a look at the things that you fear in your life, and you'll see that what we're shown by the media, whether it's on TV, mainstream, radio, in the movies, in books, magazines, pictures, and anything else you can think of, certain types of videos that prey upon our subconscious mind and on our conscious minds, the ultimate solution is going to come from within, and it happens by opening the heart and ceasing thought, if only for a few minutes. It's the unnecessary movement of the thoughts which are constantly leading you through each of the aspects of fear that were discussed on the show. I want to thank J. Krishnamurti. He's no longer with us. I'm not sure about Dr. Anderson, but consider that this message came forth in 1974. That's 36-plus years ago. And the principles still apply today. I think we could make better use of our knowledge and quit wasting our time on a roller coaster, a teeter-totter, a merry-go-round, or a hamster's exercise wheel. That's what life is about without us taking responsibility. And, of course, recognizing God as well. I want to thank you for being with us tonight. Special thanks go out to Wind Talkers Radio Network. Also, I should thank the United Galactic Federation because they're spreading this message around the galaxy. That cannot be denied. And over at BBS Radio, I want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be scientist and inventor Jim Murray. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light. and have a good night.